my pleasure and privilege tonight to introduce to you a very important American, a very valuable American. It's in large part through his efforts that the American people, within the next few weeks, will be able to hold and own gold. Now, this is a tremendous gain. It means that Americans, as individuals, will have one more hedge against inflation, and perhaps the most important single hedge that they could have. But also other things will happen. The holding of gold, the right to hold gold, will perform an educational function, because there will be a free market in gold, and as this market varies, it will also be doing something else. It will be, technically, it will be the price of gold that is under consideration, but in reality, it will be the value of the American paper dollar. When gold goes up in price, it will usually mean that the dollar has gone down in value. And we will learn something about inflation. The American people will learn something. They will learn, among other things, that inflation is not the result of this or that specific shortage, a shortage in crude oil, a shortage in gasoline, a shortage in beef, or a shortage in sugar, but rather that it is a result, the inflation is a result of a surplus of paper money created by the government. Now, this right to own gold will be an enormous step forward, but I hope that it will be followed by another step, and that is the right to make contracts in gold. At present, that right is perhaps a little ambiguous. We don't know yet, we're not sure yet, whether, for example, it is a contract, an ordinary contract, can be made in terms of gold, and or whether, for example, a contract could be made payable in paper dollars in a varying amount, depending what the price of gold was on that day. But if this right, if we have it, if we haven't got it, I hope that Congress will give us this right, and I know that Congressman Crane will do his best to see that we get this right. We may not find out whether we have it or not until we have a few court decisions. Anyway, if we have this right, then gold will become a de facto currency, whether it is monetized or not. And it will be a currency in which people will be able to make both domestic and foreign transactions. I am a believer, as many of you in this audience are, in a gold standard. But for the short term, I am quite pessimistic that we are going to get a gold standard. I don't think, as a matter of fact, that we will get an international gold standard within the next 10 years. And I'll go a little further. I think that if a bill were introduced right away in Congress to return to a full gold standard, that I personally would oppose it. This would not be a contradiction, it would not be inconsistent, it would be merely taking the long-term view. If gold, if we returned immediately to a gold standard, let us say at $180 an ounce, any figure in that neighborhood, or especially any figure lower, my guess is that the government would be bailed, the Treasury would be bailed out of gold within a few days, and the gold standard would get another black eye. We can't return to the gold standard until we have, for a convincing length of time, followed sound monetary and fiscal policies to make certain that such a standard, once adopted, is sustainable. And then we will have a further problem, of course, and that will be the problem of going back to gold at the right rate, at a rate which will be neither inflationary nor deflationary. Now, England returned the gold in the spring of 1925, and it returned at an unsustainable rate of $4.86 to the pound, and it returned with incompatible policies. It returned with cheap money policies. Partly as a result of that, the wholesale prices in England within the next 6 years, between 1925 and 1931, fell 40%. And that was partly the result of a gold standard at a false rate. Of course, it was partly also the result of the general collapse that occurred at that time. But as a result of that, England abandoned the gold standard in 1931. And the tragedy is this, that when it abandoned gold, it was not the false rate that got the blame. It was not the cheap money policies that got the blame. It was the gold standard itself that was blamed. And then again, when the U.S. went off gold in 1933, and again in 1971, it wasn't our cheap money policies, it wasn't our inflation, it wasn't our deficits, it wasn't anything like that that got the blame. It was, again, the gold standard itself. And I'm sorry to say that the overwhelming majority of economists have joined in this condemnation. I'm afraid the majority of so-called economists at this time do not believe in the gold standard. Now, we can't afford to let that kind of black eye happen to the gold standard again. What we have got to emphasize is the interdependence between a gold standard and sound money policy. A gold standard, let me repeat, is essential, but it isn't enough. It's true that unless a country is on a gold standard, it will not for a long time pursue sound monetary and fiscal policies because it won't have to, or it won't think it has to. But the converse is also true, that if a country is already on the gold standard and is nevertheless reckless and nevertheless follows unsound policy, it's not going to stay on a gold standard long. To put this in another way, the gold standard does not give any automatic assurance that sound monetary and credit policies will be followed. And to put it in still another way, the gold standard is incompatible with the welfare state, the spending state, the chronic deficit state. And that, I am afraid, is a state that we have been developing for the last 40 years, and I think we're going to have it for a pretty long time to come. But my function here tonight is not to sound off on my own views on this subject, but to introduce to you the congressman from the 12th District of Illinois, the Honorable Philip M. Crane. Phil Crane was elected at a special election for him in 1969. Then he was re-elected at the regular election in 1970, and again at the next election in 1972. And greatest miracle of all, proving how remarkable a Republican he really is, he was re-elected a couple of weeks ago. Phil Crane was born in Chicago. He went to the public schools there. And then he went on to Hillsdale College in Michigan. He then went on to postgraduate studies at the University of Michigan and the University of Vienna. And he then took his master's and doctor's degrees at the Indiana University. And he is only one of the 535 members of Congress, only one out of 11 who is a doctorate degree. He served in the U.S. Army. He taught history for some 7 years at different universities. He is the author of a book in 1964 called The Democrat's Dilemma. He is a trustee of Hillsdale College. He is a director of the International Studies Institute and of the American Conservative Union, and he is a member of more learned societies than I care to remember. He is married to this charming lady here, and at last count, they had eight children. Introduced ever since he got into Congress in 1969 a series of bills trying to restore the American people the right to old gold. He doesn't seem to remember how many bills he's introduced, but some very secret information I have counts 19. Anyway, they were probably different modifications of the same bill. But anyway, on July 2nd of this year, one of these bills was successful and became law on August 14th. And that is why we are all going to have the right to hold gold legally after January 1. Now, we had to pay a price to get this right to hold gold once more. The right is attached as an amendment to a bill appropriating $1.5 billion for the International Development Association, a foreign giveaway. But that's the way the bill came from the Senate. Now, this placed Congressman Crane, among others, in a dilemma. Should he take IDA, IDA, this is called, in order to get gold? And he decided that he would swallow it. Now, some conservative jurors have criticized him for this, and have argued that the IDA grant bill, would have been defeated without these conservative votes. And the argument is quite plausible because the IDA bill came up naked earlier and was defeated, and Phil Crane was one of the people who voted against it. But there's another side of the coin. Without the votes of the IDA bloc, certainly the votes could not have been obtained to set a definite date for the return to the right to hold gold. In fact, Phil Crane just tells me that they even discovered that the IDA bill this time would have passed without the gold clause attached to it. So, this was frankly a horse trade, and I don't think any of us should condemn horse trades in politics, because in practical politics, these are inevitable. The real question is, did the gold bloc, if I'll call them that, pay an unnecessary price for this? Did they pay an excessive price? Now, Phil Crane admitted that they were paying a price on the floor of the House, but he argued that this was a relatively small price, because the contributions, the $1.5 billion contributions to IDA are spread over 4 years, and figured on that basis, the IDA appropriation amounts not to 1% of the federal budget, but to 1/100th of 1% of the federal budget. So we can figure that perhaps we bought it very cheaply. Anyway, I will now give you the Honorable Philip M. Crane. Phil Crane was elected at a special election for him in 1969. Then he was re-elected at the regular election in 1970, and again at the next election in 1972, and greatest miracle of all, proving how remarkable a Republican he really is, he was re-elected a couple of weeks ago. Phil Crane was born in Chicago. He went to the public schools there, and then he went on to Hillsdale College in Michigan. He then went on to postgraduate studies at the University of Michigan, and the University of Vienna. He then took his master's and doctor's degrees at the Indiana University. He is only one of the 535 members of Congress, only one out of 11 who is a doctor, who has a doctorate degree. He served in the U.S. Army. He taught history for some 7 years at different universities. He is the author of a book in 1964 called The Democrat's Dilemma. He is a trustee of Hillsdale College. He is a director of the International Studies Institute and of the American Conservative Union. And he is a member of more learned societies than I care to remember. He is married to this charming lady here, and at last count, they had eight children. I will now give you the Honorable Philip M. Crane.